This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
Listeners, you're in for a real treat. Joseph Toon of historyandculturewalkingtours.com and josephtoontours.com joins us here on Solo Travel Talk to talk about San Miguel de Allende. Originally from the United States, Joseph now lives in San Miguel, leading tours, writing books, and dancing his way through this unique and culturally rich city. I'm producer Catherine O'Brien. Astrid is just recently back from San Miguel de Allende, and she fell in love with this beautiful city. We turn to Joseph to find out the history, the culture, the religious influences, fireworks, dancing. It's all in this episode of Solo Travel Talk. Here's Joseph. We are speaking with Joseph Toon of historyandculturewalkingtours.com. Joseph, welcome to Solo Travel Talk.
Good morning. Thank you, Catherine.
I'm hoping you can tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. How did you end up in San Miguel de Allende, and how did you start being a tour guide?
Well, for 20 years, I had a technical writing company. Do you know anybody that has asthma, and they do those inhalers?
Yes.
My company wrote the box they came in for Glaxo.
Oh, wow. That is a specialized writing for sure.
Yeah, it is a niche. And I wanted to take my kids somewhere in Mexico beyond the beaches because they grew up on the beach. And we've been to Puerto Vallarta and Cancun, and you could have been in Myrtle Beach or Atlantic City. So I called the consulate in Raleigh, and they recommended the state of Guanajuato. Came down, just loved it, bought a house the first time here, and moved my kids down when they were still in high school.
Wow, what an adventure.
Yeah, it was. After a couple months, though, unfortunately, we learned if you finished high school here, you couldn't go to college in the States. And this was back in 08, the same week the recession started.
Wow.
So overnight, I lost 70% of my clients. So it was time to move back. And we moved back, and they finished high school. And once they were done, I sold the company, retired, and came back down. And that was about 7 years ago. And when I first came here, I was a volunteer English teacher, and I had a grandmother in my class, Mercedes, and she took me aside one day and asked me to be her danse-en partner. If you're not familiar, danse-en is a style of dance where the woman has fans and the men wear linen shirts and hats. I was like, oh, Mercedes. All the classes were in Spanish. At that point, I didn't speak any, and I didn't know how to dance. And she was really short, so she was like, well, come down here. So I bent over, she pointed at my chest and said, you're a guy. That's all she cared about. She just wanted to have a male partner. So we took the classes, got good at it, and started performing at festivals around town, and eventually around the state and the country. And all these festivals were for saints and virgins I had never heard of. Even though I'd gone to Catholic school all the way through graduate school, they're just not popular up north. So I'd have to come back from every event and do research to figure out who that party was for.
Mm.
And wrote it down, and I realized at the end of the year I had 80-some stories.
Wow.
So I tied them into a website thinking, all right, folks come down on vacation, and they wake up to fireworks, they can look it up by date, and have some idea what's going on. And then I started doing the tours as a lark. I thought I'll do some fundraisers for the library. But the first one got 35 people, the next one got 70. Now, depending on the time of year, I can do 8 or 9 of these a week. For me, this is great fun. I get to meet people from all over the world. I learn something on every tour. The end of last year, I turned all these stories of the different festivals into 4 books on San Miguel. When I put them on Amazon, now, depending on the time of year, they'll go to #1 for Mexican history and travel.
Wow.
And then at Easter, I released 2 more, and they went to #1 for new releases. So for me, this is great fun. You know, I get to spend my days fully immersed in history and having profound conversations with people from all over the world. It really is a lovely life.
I always love the stories of people who are just pursuing something for fun, and it turns into something bigger. I'm always so inspired by that.
I never would have known that A would lead to B to lead all the way over here. You never know.
You just said yes to dancing, and look at what happened. Your whole
exactly.
Life has changed.
You still spend 2 or 3 hours a day dancing and teaching dance.
Wow,
it's
my
fun.
Goodness. You're a jack of all trades. You're a Joseph of all trades here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty common in Mexico. You'll meet a lot of people that do 5 or 6 different things because it's hard to make enough money at one thing to actually live.
Mm.
Now, I'm lucky. I'm retired. You know, for me, this is just a lark. But for many Mexicans, they'll do 5 or 6 different occupations because you never know what one's going to be needed at that time. It's a different approach to life than in the States.
Sounds like it. Let's talk about San Miguel. Now, I have to tell you, whenever I've mentioned to people San Miguel de Allende, if people have been there, a sort of a blissful look comes over their face and they say, oh, I love San Miguel de Allende. This seems to be just an incredibly special place. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, now being an expat living there, you've gathered all these historical stories. Can you just give us a sketch of San Miguel de Allende? And also, we think of it now as an artist colony. Can you give us a little bit of a perspective on the development of this wonderful city?
Sure, sure. I can give you the 3,000 years of history in 3 minutes or less.
Perfect. That's exactly right.
From about 1,000 years before Christ to about 1,200 after, there was a group of indigenous people named Toltecs that lived here. And they believed every mountain had its own deity. So if you go mountain climbing around San Miguel, you're going to run into pyramids. Or the remains of pyramids. Or you may find a chapel, because the Spanish come later, they knock down that pyramid and build a chapel. Right around 1200, they simply disappear. No one knows why. Don't know if it's a political change or a climate change. And two new tribes move into the area. One is the Otomis, and they were farmers. And when you see women around town in today's world in the brightly colored outfits selling the ragdolls, they're descendants of the Otomis. And then the hunter-gatherers were Chichimecas. And so those are the two tribes, the farmers and the hunter-gatherers, that are here when the Spanish get here. And when the Spanish get here, they immediately go to war with the Chichimecas because they want to make them slaves. It's called the Battle of the Barbarians. Neither group gets ahead until one day a cross appears in the sky above one of the southern mountains. If you were Spanish, you assumed God was on your side, so you stopped fighting. But for the indigenous, they believe any intersection of two lines is the meeting of male and female, which means the deity. So God's on their side, and they stop fighting. And all this happens on the feast day of St. Michael. And that's why we're called San Miguel. In today's world, we're San Miguel de Allende, after the founding father that was born here. Back then, it was San Miguel de los Chichimecas, for those indigenous hunter-gatherers. For the next 300 years, it's the Inquisition. And that lasted here much longer than it did over in Europe. And with the Inquisition, we're at our economic peak, because we're on the silver route. That route that went from Veracruz all the way up into Santa Fe, that took the silver back to Spain, and from Spain we got religious art, letters from home, cast iron beds and whatnot. And we were a safe spot on the route. After the revolution from Spain, we fall into an economic depression. If you want to compare it to a city in the States, picture Charleston. Before the Civil War, they're very, very wealthy. Following the war, they're poor too. And both cities are so poor, nothing changes, which ends up being a good thing in the long run. Around 1902, the factory moves into town that makes the white Muslim cloth for tennis shoes. So if you're my age, your father, your uncles, your grandfather, for the next 100 years, everybody worked at the shoe factory, or, well, not shoe factory, the Muslim factory. In today's world, it's a high-end art gallery, so you can still see the old equipment that was used in the factory, but it's paintings and restaurants and that sort of stuff today. In the 40s, an American comes down named Sterling Dickinson. He likes it here. He decides to stay, and he starts building art colleges. Because what he's trying to do is attract those veterans from World War II that are coming back from the war, use your VA benefits, come down here, get a bachelor's in art for much cheaper than it would cost up in the States. And that opens us up to tourism from the States. In 1948, Life magazine runs a piece on living in San Miguel, and that's when folks from the U.S. start coming down. But our big boost is in the 80s. Because in the 80s, if you were a film director or a fashion photographer and you saw the streets here, you realize, if I just throw some dirt on the street and put a wagon train on it, I'm visually back in the 1600s.
Wow.
If I put a bunch of 1920s cars, poof, I'm back in the 1920s. You know, to this day, if I walk around a mall in the States and go past Coldwater Creek or Lane Bryant, Victoria's Secrets, I can always tell when their models have been here, because I'll recognize the buildings in the background. And that's what attracted the Johnny Depps and the Salma Hayeks of this world to come down and do movies and TV shows and advertisements. In today's world, we get a lot of Canadians between Christmas and the week before Easter. Because it's so cold up north, a lot of those will have second or third homes. So if you want to see a stand-up comic or a Patsy Cline imitator, any sort of English-speaking type of culture, that's your time. Because really, who the city gears towards is that 1 or 2% economically speaking, from Mexico City. And that's why if you go to the bars and restaurants here in San Miguel, they're going to look like bars and restaurants that you'll find in Miami Beach or Manhattan, because that's what that crowd is used to. And if you travel on the outskirts of town, you'll see these huge housing developments that have different themes like horseback riding or helicopter pad. Those are to attract people from Mexico City to buy a second or third home here out in the country and then come into town for different events. So now we're a totally tourism-based economy. Hmm. And that's part of what makes it so nice to visit, because that's what everyone is geared towards. And again, if you're my age, your parents, your grandparents, they all grew up with a certain number of foreigners in the area. And so they're just used to us. And the things that we do as foreigners, that people are like, yeah, that's just what foreigners do. And so it's a very comfortable place to be in that regard.
That's really great. And by the way, listeners, if you need 3,000 years of history, that's what you ask a tour guide, because you clearly have a storyteller's spirit to be able to bring that all to life in just a couple of minutes. Good job, Joseph.
Thank you.
I can tell you're very practiced. Well, you know, you mentioned the events and the artists who are attracted. And I love how you're saying, for a modern time period sense, there's sort of been a history of people coming to visit and that the city has really embraced that. For the person who hasn't been, can you describe a little bit more of the culture? And I'm thinking, because it sounds like to me, somebody who has not yet visited, that there is sort of a hand in the past and a hand in the present. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. One thing a lot of people don't realize, particularly from the States, and we don't really learn Mexican history, is the Inquisition lasted here much longer than it did in Europe, and all the way into 1820. Then it took another 100 years and another revolution in the 1920s before the church lost any real power. And that's why I talk about it so much in my tours, because it still influences what we do on a day-to-day basis. All Mormon friends that will sponsor Catholic events has nothing to do with being Mormon, but has everything to do with being Mexican. Mexico is a country that's Catholic by culture, if not conviction. So that plays into everything an awful lot. You know, in the States, when we took over from the indigenous, eventually they ended up on reservations and whatnot. That never happened here in Mexico. They're still part of the culture. So, for example, last weekend was the feast day of St. James, one of the apostles. Spent the whole day out in the country because there were hours of dancing between the Otomis, the farmers, and the Chichimecas, the hunter-gatherers. And at one point it started to just pour rain, and we had three tents. And so in one tent was the Otomi dancing, and another one was the Chichimeca dancing, and another one was all the salsa dancing to Ricky Martin. It all just blends. It's nothing for a child to go to school, let's say, from 7 to 2, come home, have their big meal, and then from 4 to 6, take a dance class, take a instrument class, take a singing class, because those are the skills you're going to need the rest of your life. When you go to parties, you want to be entertaining. We from the States like to be entertained. It's sort of a different approach. Hmm. Even though it's modern world, you'll watch indigenous dancing all afternoon because it's fascinating, particularly if you understand what they're doing. And then to throw on top of that, that other layer of just art. There are people that come here and are like, I like the lighting. I like how it appears against the pink limestone of buildings. And they'll just change their life and start practicing their art down here. So you've got that sort of bohemian influence on top of it. And then there's just always the very conservative Mexican Catholicism. Last night was, in 2 days, Mary's believed to be lifted up to heaven. So last night celebrated when she takes her final siesta. And there is a statue of Mary that's laid out. She falls asleep. You say a rosary. You give her a crown. And you have a huge party. Lots of music, lots of dancing. And then tomorrow, a rope will be tied around the statue. You change out her face and her hands, so now she's looking up into heaven, and the rope pulls her up into heaven. You know, everything's very tactile. These characters, these saints, they're not just this foreign object that has a backstory. They're somebody that actually helps you. So Mexican culture, in many ways, is very feminine. It's very ritualistic, because that life of Mary is so important, and you do the same things year after year because everybody knows these stories. And it's part of what makes life different. If I'm chatting with you and you're Mexican and I'm complaining about I've had a hard day, we both realize none of this matters. Hmm. And that life really begins when you die, because that's when you enter eternal life. So no matter how bad it is in the moment, your friend may just say, God's will, or God only knows, and you're okay with that, because you know what I'm doing right now isn't what is important.
And I think that a lot of people, as you mentioned, you get travelers from all over the world. That sounds like a type of cultural influence that doesn't exist in a lot of other places, that sort of blending that you were just describing.
Well, we're still very homogenous. I mean, we're still 96% Catholic. You can't have one religion be in charge for 400 years and not have it still be pervasive. Mm. I got a woman from Australia over the weekend, and it just fascinated her because she was like, where are the Muslims? I'm like, on vacation? there aren't that many that live here. Well, there aren't any in this city. But that's why. It's not that people wouldn't welcome other races or other cultures. It's just they're not here. Mm. You wouldn't have wanted to live here for those 400 years. And it's different. I'll get people on tours, including clergy from the north, that might be very Catholic by a northern standard, but it's different here. Hmm. You know, and a lot of times when I have clergy on tour, they don't particularly like it. Because here, faith is much more feminine, it's much more ritualistic, and for a lot of northerners, you tend to think of faith as being more theological. And it's not. It's very much dissecting the life of Mary, because she outlives Jesus, she outlives Joseph. She has a big birthday party when she turns 3. So if you're a girl, you have a big birthday party when you turn 3. Her life is very much replicated, and it reflects on the compassionate nature of Mexico.
You've mentioned a couple times now different events. It sounds like that San Miguel de Allende is really a culture of events and everybody participating and being involved in these feasts. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, part of that is a throwback to... If as far back in your family tree you can go, everyone's been conquered, you have a very different approach to the world. You don't get very obsessed about tomorrow, because tomorrow may never come, or your owner may kill you overnight, and so why are you worrying about tomorrow? And that still impacts how we think today. You know, if I've made enough money working this morning to get by today, I'm not going to work this afternoon. There's no need to. And if you're saving money, it's not a 401k type society. And many times, Mexico, the peso has really dropped. So those people that have been saving money for all those years, they should have been having parties. And that's why, I've got enough money for the day and I've got some extra, let's go celebrate. And between birthdays and anniversaries and Catholic events and musical groups coming through town and art shows opening, there's always something to go celebrate. So, I mean, we just have fireworks and festivals and live music in an abundance. It's shocking to many people from other countries how much there is to celebrate. But if you're living in the moment, that's what you want to do. I'm healthy today. My family's here today. Let's celebrate today. And there's always going to be some excuse between baptisms and St. Dave and things for Mary and... You become very close to your family and friends through all these celebrations, and everybody knows how to sing or dance, play an instrument, and it's fun. It really is fun.
That can throw people off.
Yeah, because you have a lot of foreigners that will complain, oh, the fireworks started at 5, or the bells were ringing before the sunrise. Why? There could be any myriad of reasons. Maybe 9 days before the feast day of the Virgin of Carmel, when you get up early, say a rosary before you go to work. I can walk by a church and see a very drunk man with his shirt off just slamming his chest against the bell. And chances are his wife had a baby that morning. So he's announcing to the world the arrival of a new soul. There are other days the bells and fireworks may go off all day on my street. And that's because one of my neighbors has died and she never married. So they're announcing to heaven the arrival of another virgin. They're just a myriad of reasons. Unless you go out and ask the person who's doing it, you're never going to know for sure. But it's all part of that celebration culture.
Wow.
Sorry, that was probably way too long.
No, it wasn't. Not at all. No. Well, I have to say, I live in Baton Rouge, and our neighbor is New Orleans, and there's a lot of similarities I'm hearing that always celebrating, don't think about tomorrow. We never know what tomorrow could bring. So if you have it in your pocket
and
today,
the dead are always with you.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's because New Orleans was French Catholic. Isn't that different from being Spanish Catholic?
That's true. Very true.
Yeah, they've got a lot of the same saints and same celebrations. a lot of times I'll have people that'll come, they'll do a tour the first day, and if they like me and they like my style, they'll end up spending every day of their vacation with me. And one time it was a young man from Thailand, and he was so funny to me because in Thailand, the number of bells that rang each had a different significance, whether it was 25 or 32, whatever. And by the third day, I can tell. He always was counting the bells as they went off. And I'm like, stop that. It means nothing. You're driving yourself crazy. And he made one of the most interesting comments, and that was, there's a certain niceness when you realize there's something or someone greater than you, more powerful than you, that knows you exist. And when you realize that, suddenly you don't have to be the best-looking person in the room or the smartest or the funniest. It just doesn't matter. You can just be yourself, and it's okay because you realize there's something that's taking care of you. And I was like, wow. Well, that was coming from some of my kids' age, and it was a pretty profound statement. But that's part of why I like doing this. People will just start talking about stuff that you're like, wow, never would have thought of it that way, but that's very interesting and very clever.
I want to get into the tours and talk about some of the specific tours that you offer, because let me tell you, I read the titles of some of these and I was like, well, first of all, I want to go on every single one of these tours. And secondly, I can't wait to crack into how you came up with these tours. But before I do that, I'm really intrigued. You're an expat. Yeah. You're an American and living in San Miguel de Allende. It seems to me, just hearing you talk, that gives you a really unique perspective. I'm sure it gives you a new perspective on your own American roots, but also I'm guessing you probably can see Mexican culture through a different lens. And just the way you're describing this young man from Thailand, I'm thinking you just have sort of a unique perspective.
Yes. Now, here's the two interesting little sidebars that were part of your question. One thing I've learned since I've come here is not call myself an American, because people from North and South America get very insulted by that because we're all Americans. So it takes many more words, but I've learned to always try to say, and I'm not always successful, a person from the United States. Mm.
De Estados Unidos.
Because if I call myself an American, Mexicans are like, well, I am too. So are the people from Guatemala and Panama and Bolivia. I'm like, oh, okay. The other thing I've learned to try not to do is use the phrase expat. Because Mexicans get offended that I, as a foreigner, come here and I'm an expatriate. Mm. A Mexican goes to the United States and they're an immigrant. And it's funny, it's just a little change of wording, but it really does reflect how you view it. And there's just stuff I do every day. Like if I'm talking to you and I drop my soda, my gut reaction is to go get a dish towel and clean it up. A Mexican won't do that because then you've got to wash the dish towel and dry it, and that costs money. They'll get a mop. And it's so funny to me. There's stuff I do on a day-to-day basis that I get reminded of what someone from the U.S. does because we're wealthier. And I just had no idea until I got here. But you're right, it does put a different perspective on everything. And I've been very lucky because of the dancing. You always need more men in dancing. We die off sooner. It's harder, I mean, 10 times harder because we've got a lead. So I ended up being invited to many, many events that foreigners just aren't normally invited to, unless you're actually married to a Mexican. And you're right, it makes it very interesting for me because I knew who Mary was growing up, but I didn't realize she got lifted into heaven. I didn't know she had a big birthday party at 3. The life is much more examined here. Mm. And that's what all these different celebrations are for. So it does. I've got to be careful because in America, a person from the United States, sense of humor doesn't blend here. I can make jokes on a tour with people from Europe and the States and Canada. I can't do in Spanish. St. Michael was an archangel, which means he never lived. Because he never lived, he has no male genitalia. Because he'd have no need for it, he was never alive. Well, that you run into a lot. Like, there's a story I tell of, there's St. Teresa. And St. Teresa got very into the notion of being one with God. And she gets so into it, she would physically levitate and have orgasms. And these were known as her ecstasies. And if you ride through the city buses here in town, you look up on the roof, you're going to see an image of a life-size nun with an odd look on her face. And that would be St. Teresa in one of her ecstasies. And on Christmas Eve, I had a priest from Dublin on the tour, so I wasn't going to share that story because I was afraid he'd find it vulgar. So, of course, I did. And when I was done, he was quiet for a long time. And they eventually said, well, St. Teresa would like to ride the buses here in San Miguel because with all the cobblestone streets, the streets are very bumpy.
Oh, my God.
So that's the kind of joke I can make to a foreigner that I would never say to a Mexican, because they would just be offended.
Well, speaking of offense, I went right to the American and I also said expat. So I've got two strikes already, but you've been very gracious about it.
I do it all the time still, because they're such shorter words and we're lazy.
Well, let's not be lazy. Let's go right into your walking tours. Astrid is a huge advocate for walking tours, and I also enjoy them. Now, tell us a little bit, why should somebody walk to experience a place? And also, like I said, we teased everybody about some of the tours that you lead. Let's get into those.
First of all, I highly recommend walking around San Miguel in general. Not because of all those cobblestones, there's a reason why we're called the City of Fallen Women. Because it's very easy to take a tumble. Or, I guess it's probably easy to have sex, too. But I always recommend to people, ride a bus around town. Ride a car. Because all those things will put you at a different eye level. And I can walk a street 1,000 times, but just being up that 6 feet in the bus, I'm going to see stuff I've never seen before. Because when I walk it, I'm too busy looking for cobblestones. As for walking tours themselves, every city has them. Any city is a tourist city. But a lot of times, including here, it's just, this building was built in 1820, it's Gothic. This building was built in 1710, nobody cares. Because who knows who these people were? And for me, when you're telling a story, of course you have the beginning, middle, and end. But in the beginning, you've got to have something that makes that person relatable to you today. You know, this guy had a mom who was a nag. This gal had a suitor that she wasn't the least bit interested in. This man was dark-skinned in a world that he could only move forward in if you were white. Something that's like, oh, that's me. I've had that experience, too. My mom's a nag. And then you've got to have the conflict, and the conflict can be life or death. You're in the Colosseum. You're surrounded by lions. What do you do? But there's some conflict with this person you've already related to. And then lastly, you've got to have some relevancy. What does that mean today? It's just not some marquees nobody cares about that nobody remembers. But now, this is a person that is the patron saint of lost causes. And when you travel throughout the states and you see these fundraising efforts for St. Jude's hospitals, they're for terminally ill children because they're a lost cause. And St. Jude is the patron of lost causes. And suddenly you're like, oh, this means something to me today. Mm. And that, to me, is what I try so hard at. It's not just a statue in a church. Because if you just walk through four churches, they're going to be like, oh, wow, they all look the same. They're all carbon copies. They're all these gruesome statues. But if you were somebody who's able to explain, okay, see that gruesome image of Jesus? That's where he falls for the third time. And it's right before he dies. And that's who you pray to right before you die. So the fact that there are four candles lit today let me know that there are four people in town that aren't going to make it through the day. And so they've had a loved one come light a candle before this image to ask for Jesus' help with their transition. And now, suddenly, it means something. It's just not another gory statue. It has some meaning. And it's something that you, too, can relate to.
Well, I love you're really setting up people to have a context. And I loved what you said about even in a bus, you get a different worldview, literally, because you're up a little higher. I think that's something to remember for all of our travelers. Now, let's tease no longer. Here are some of the titles of your tours. I'm so intrigued. Witches and Crosses, Love Adventure, and you even have a walking tour of cave art. This is, the breadth is just amazing. So tell us a little bit about specifically some of the tours you lead.
Well, the most popular one is the History and Culture. Because that goes to the four churches and just helps explain what it is you're looking at. You may think, oh, it's just an outside of the church. But if you realize, yeah, but notice that it's concave? That's because it represents a cave. And for the indigenous, caves were the entrance to the afterworld. And suddenly you start looking at things much more differently. You know, see that little, looks like a druid face? That's the indigenous god of the sun. And then, suddenly, it's not just buildings that you walk by and think, yeah, 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 we have so many churches. And yes, we do. We have 10 times as many as the city as our size normally does, because that's what you did during the Inquisition. If you want to keep the Inquisitor off your back, it was really good to be seen building a church. But they all mean different things, and they all were built for different people, and that makes it much more interesting. And suddenly you're like, oh, that woman selling the rag doll, I know who she is. I know what that doll means, and I understand why it's relevant in today's world. The second most popular tour is the Day of the Dead Cemetery Tour. And here's a funny story with that. When I started doing tours, the first time I did Day of the Dead tours, I got two people. The next year, I had a best-selling book on Day of the Dead. I had a big event at the Katrina, the Skeleton Museum here in town. Got four people. Last year, I got eight. So I was like, oh, good. It's doubled.
Doubling, yeah.
But suddenly, that whole week before Day of the Dead, I got 60 to 70 people every day. I mean, it was just unheard of. And it turns out, when I asked people why the sudden interest, part of it was the movie Coco. A lot of people had seen it before its release and just wanted to know more about Day of the Dead. Part of it was Halloween's become so popular up north that Day of the Dead, for many people, even though it's a completely different thing, they relate it with Halloween, so they want to have a different type of Halloween. Mm. And then another point is we got a new administration. And under the Obama administration, it made Mexico very scary. You know, you should be going on spring break in Florida, not Cancun. And so there was very little U.S. tourism then. But for whatever reason, under the Trump administration, we get a lot more travelers. And, you know, part of it is Europe has gotten a little more dangerous. You don't have to cross an ocean to get here. And you are in a totally different culture. So, you know, 2 hours from Houston, it's a different language. It's a different culture. It's ancient buildings. It's a very European experience without that hassle of going to Europe. So it's funny, just within the last year, we've gotten more tourism from the U.S. than we have for a long, long time.
You were mentioning you also get travelers from all over the world. Is that still holding, or
yeah,
have you seen changes there, too?
Yeah. Australia, Thailand, all over the place. I get many Mexicans, and I'll tell them stuff, and I'm thinking, oh, this is boring. You already know this. And many times they're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, wow.
And I'll get people from Mexico City that I'll say, you know, don't go to Mexico City on the 28th of the month, because that's St. Jude's Day. And they'll close all the downtown streets for processions for St. Jude, and traffic will come to a standstill. And all people from Mexico City being like, that's why? Like, yeah, that's why.
You're an ambassador of this information.
For some people, not many, a lot of people come to town and just like to stay in town. You know, like to walk around. It's a fascinating place to walk around. For those that I can get to go out of town, I'll take them on the silver route like it was 300 years ago when the wagon trains were on it. You'll pass livestock, and it's a little scary because if you fall off the road, yeah, that's the end of that. And then I'll take them out to a cloistered monastery. I'll take them where the revolution from Spain started. I'll take them to an old castle wall from the 1600s that's still used as a dam. Then I'll take them out to where the town started, because the cool thing about that little church is they built a dam in 1960 to flood this little river that ran through town so they wouldn't have flooding in other cities. And they weren't quite sure how big the lake would get. So they moved all the houses from this little village back, but kept the original church from the 1540s where it was. So when you go out to visit it, you're just surrounded by fields. And it gives you a really good feeling for what life was like in the mid-1500s and why they constantly got attacked and why they eventually moved the city. But for me, that's probably the third most popular tour. I kind of don't do too much of the Witch and Cross tour because I would take people to sites where the witches worship. And that can be a little freaky. I'd have people on tours that would be like, oh, you arranged this. I'm like, no, I did not. And for people that are in the dark arts, to be in the middle of a battlefield and to be under a bridge and to be in a cave under a bridge is like the trifecta of the dark arts. They're the three big things you really want, because a battlefield is a lot of young death, a cave is the entrance to the afterworld, as is under a bridge. And we would see these people practicing with their pentagons and whatnot. And one day the guy was playing music, so I thought, okay, I'd like to record this, but I'll keep it in my pocket because I'm sure he doesn't want his image taken. And when I went to leave, he came up from out of the cave and was like, if you recorded me in any way, my evil will go with you. So I came home immediately, got the recording off my telephone, put holy water around the doors and windows, washed my clothes, washed myself. When I go to take the clothes out of the washing machine, there are about 300 toothpicks in the washing machine. Now, I'm an adult. I use dental floss. I don't even have toothpicks in the house. So I was like, well, that's the worst that evil could do. I'm okay with it. So since then, I've been like, yeah, I don't think I want to take tourists to where the witches worship. Probably not the best idea.
Yeah, I'm freaked out right now. Yeah, I'm off that tour, just so you know. When I come to see you, I am not going on that tour.
No, do the Day of the Dead. You'll get the same information, and you don't have to meet any witches.
Phew. Well, Joseph, as we sort of close out here, you've been so entertaining and so informative. I really love this. I'm wondering if you have any specific tips for solo travelers. Astrid was really clear about saying that San Miguel de Allende is very solo friendly. The solo travelers would feel comfortable there. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, tell us a little bit about solo travelers in your city.
It's funny. One of the things I've learned doing the tours is a lot of times, particularly married couples, they think, oh, when we retire, we'll go see the world. And for whatever reason, we men as a gender just don't want to do that at that age. We're much more comfortable just staying home. So there are a lot of women that come here by themselves with their sister-in-law, with their sister, with their old sorority sisters. But there are a lot of just solo female travelers. And they're perfectly fine. You can walk to downtown any time of the day or night, and you'll be fine. Now, I wouldn't go out into the outskirts drunk as a skunk at 2 in the morning, but I wouldn't do that anywhere in the world. That's just silly. But if you're sober and you're just walking around and having a good time, you're perfectly fine. And that's one of the big appeals. And for a lot of women, they'll come down and spend 6 months just because they want to learn Spanish. Or they want to learn 5 different types of art. I want to learn how to do watercolors, pencil art, and something else. Or I want to learn how to tango in Mexico. I want to learn how to salsa. And they'll just fully immerse themselves for months learning different styles of dance, different styles of art, getting better at Spanish. And it's a perfectly lovely city to do that in. And there's the biggest English-speaking library from the United States on down is here. So there's English events. You can hear lectures in English. You can meet other foreigners. They're online. There are 2 or 3 English language newspapers. Another way, if you want to just meet other gals or other people that are here traveling too, it's a really fun city to spend a lot of time. We've got food from all over the world. So if you're a foodie, any style, you can eat off the food carts and have shark fins and cow tongue and whatever else you want just there on the street each night. It's just a really fun city to walk around and immerse yourself in learning new things. I mean, really can't recommend it enough. For a solo traveler, you'd be perfectly safe. You'd have unlimited new things to learn about, and you can rent an apartment in a couple months, and the time will fly by. And people do that all the time, and then they turn around and buy a house, and next thing you know, they're living here.
You're not just recruiting tourists, you're recruiting fellow neighbors there in San Miguel.
I love it. There's stuff I do every day. I talk to people about the history, the culture. I teach a dance class. I get to go exploring on the old silver route, spend my days in cemeteries, stuff I just couldn't do in the States. And that's what a lot of people realize. They come down and think, I can make jewelry here. I don't need as much money as I did in the States just to get by on a day-to-day basis. And suddenly that just frees you up to try to experience new stuff. And it's great. Really, I can't recommend it enough.
It sounds great. It sounds
you're
great.
You got a 2-hour flight from Houston, so it's not like you're going to Tanzania.
Yeah, no kidding.
You can get home if you need to.
That's great. First of all, people are going to want to go on your tours, and they're going to want to have you as a dance partner. So how can people learn more about you, your tours, and get in contact with you?
Well, again, my name is Joseph, like in Mary and Joseph. And Tune is T like in Tommy, O-O. N as in Nellie, E. Remember Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life? Just picture her name, but with a T. And you can go on the web under josephtune.com or josephtunetours.com. If you look on Amazon, under Joseph Tune or San Miguel de Allende Secrets, the 6 or 7 books are going to come up. Really, you just look anywhere under Joseph Tune, you'll find me. On Facebook, under Joseph Tune Tours, I'm everywhere. Because I'll just come back from an event. For me, it's exciting to explain for other people. You know, you hear fireworks, here's why. To me, it's great fun.
And for listeners, I will include links in the show notes for everything Joseph Tune, so you'll be able to just click through and get there. And Joseph, thank you so much for this. This has been a really wonderful exploration of San Miguel de Allende from your perspective. Thank you so much for being on Solo Travel Talk.
Oh, thank you for the opportunity, Catherine. Have a great day and great travels.
What an incredible journey. Don't forget, listeners, you can get a copy of Astrid's amazing packing list to help your packing just be just a little bit less stressful. Just go to her website, astridtravel.com. Right there on the front page, you can put in your email and get that packing list right away. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, any fine place that you can find a podcast, you can find Solo Travel Talk. We love our listeners. We love our subscribers. Subscribing to this show allows it to be seamlessly delivered to you, but it also pushes out this information to other potential solo travelers. Give us a rating, give us a review. We love it all. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. I hope you had as much fun and learned as much as I did. We'll see you next week on Solo Travel Talk. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.